out of the usual. And I had in mind, I was thinking of the excellent doctrine classes we are having, to think of something that would lend itself well in harmony with them. And that is what I have done. It'll be... I'll try not to make it too complicated. It could be with me a moment. Here we are. Sorry. What I'm going to do to explain to you the fundamentals of our faith, we call it the Reformed faith, and show you how important it is. It's a pity, really, that our church generally, we don't know these principles. Now, there will be two names, or three maybe named here, of great theologians, two great theologians and one not. The first one I'm dealing with, which was a great misfortune that he ever had this idea, because his doctrines have more or less ruined the Christian faith in these days. His name was James Arminius, and so his teaching is called Arminianism. And he wrote these 5 points after Calvin had died. And so they felt that somehow they must answer this heresy. So Calvin's teaching is brought into play. And then they came what they called the 5 points of Calvin, but Calvin was dead. And so they were the 5 points of Calvin, yes, but they were written by Beza, who was in harmony with Calvin and a great theologian. But of course they are Calvin's points from his teaching to answer this terrible heretic called James Arminius. Now, to understand the importance of it, I'm going to explain to you the 5 points of Arminius. And you can, if you listen carefully, you'll find how dangerous they are. His first point says that every child is born in innocence. He doesn't become a sinner until he sins. So it is his choice. So then you can gather from that that he could then, by extreme effort, not sin. So he is the master of it all. So every child was born innocent. Election, he said, you could refuse to be elected by God or accept it. And then the atonement was for everybody and everything. No limit to it. It wasn't to the church alone, but to everything and everybody, which is one that people stumble at. We can also resist the grace of God in our hearts if we don't want that grace, that we have the power to resist God. And also in perseverance, it is we who persevere, not God persevering with us. Now, I don't know how you hearing those teachings, but those were the teachings. Now, this is how they were answered. That it was all of grace. So we use the word, to make it easy, the word tulip, the flower tulip. And each one is a help to remember these five fundamental pillars, if you like, of the Reformed faith. The first is T, total depravity. We are not born innocent. We are born as sinners, total depravity. This is because of the fall. Now, as in Adam all fell, that is, all through the veins of all men afterwards, men and women, there would be this principle of evil, this tendency to sin. So that every child born would be really, from the line of Adam, would be a sinner. And he would not be able to throw that off himself. So however hard he tried, so that's why, you see, when we try to gain salvation by good works, we can't. Because we have a powerful principle of the fall of sinfulness in our hearts, pride. Even if we do a very, very good work, we can stand back and say, isn't that good? Isn't that wonderful? Which shows really that it is self-centered. In the one that we're supporting, we are born as sinners. There's plenty of iniquity and sin that my mother conceived me, for example. Like that, there are many, apart from the teaching, there are verses as well. Now then, what does this do? Shall I explain to you what it means to be total depravity? It does not mean that we are totally evil. It means that we are governed by evil. And I think the example I gave in a children's story years ago, but it is a helpful one. You take a tumbler of water, clean water, and you inject some ink into it, and it goes kind of a blue. But by the morning, it looks quite clear again, but there's a sediment of blue at the bottom. But if you were doing a kind of a scientific thing, you would then take some water, not from the bottom, but from the top, thinking, though this is clear, it wouldn't be completely clear. So what I'm saying is this, our best, is our worst is awful. Even our best is tainted. Do you see it? Even our best is tainted by sin. So that what we mean by total depravity, it reaches every part, especially the baser parts of us, the bad parts of us. But even when we think we're being good, it influences even that area as well. So it is total. Man cannot save himself because of that. He's a sinner. He's born a sinner. And however sweet and lovely little babies may be, they are born as sinners. Now then, that's the first one, T. The next one, T-U, unconditional election. Now, election means to be chosen. That in eternity, God chose you before this world was made. So that even before your country was formed or your parents were there, God is so vast, so great, his knowledge so perfect, his creation is immense and huge, there's no end to it, and also this little world in a tiny, tiny solar system, in one galaxy, yet this is a world that he set his love upon. And all those who inhabit this earth, those who will be Christian, will be having elected in eternity, far before time. So these are principles, remember. I'll help you out in a moment. Now then, when we are elect of God, it is unconditional. That is, he doesn't elect me because I've been a nice boy or a nice girl. He doesn't elect me because I've been brought up in a good family. He doesn't elect me because I belong to a certain country. He elects me according to his own will. We cannot question it. We cannot search it. It's his will. Now then, it is unconditional. You cannot say, I know why I was elect. I was a good church member. I worked very hard. I did my best. I even believed a lot. That's why he elected me. Oh, no, not that. He elects out of his own will. That's why often you'll find the most terrible character, the most appalling, appalling characters. Take the Apostle Paul. I mean, he was cruel. He persecuted women and children and had them put to death. You know, his name was the name of terror, a Saul of Tarsus. Yet he was elect. And one day, God met him on the way to Damascus and spoke to him, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? And appointed him to be a great teacher of the gospel in the parts of the world. So you can't say, was there anything in Paul? No, he'll tell you himself, he said. When he looks back, he counts all that he knew before as done. He said, it was no use at all. But you are very religious, Paul. You're a good Jew. You did a lot of praying and you fasted. Yes, I know, he said. But it didn't do anything for me. He didn't elect me because of that. God elects according to his own will. It is unconditional election. Amen. Now then, no merits at all. That's T-U. Now we come to L. Limited atonement. Now, people find this a hard one. And there are lots of what we call four-point Calvinists. They'll take the first two and the last two, but they won't take the centre one. They say you cannot limit the atonement of Christ. And it's quite rational, you see. You can say, well, he died potentially for all. Everybody in this world, he died for them all. But if you look at the end, who are those who are in heaven? Well, those who came to an experience of the atonement of Christ. So some were not there, that's right. But who are there? The elect. So he limits. He hadn't got to, but he did. He limits the gospel of Christ to the elect, to the church. Do you see it? He limits it to that. So what you see here is something very, very powerful, that God is absolute in the gospel. Now, then, when you have it the other way, I'll take an Arminian preacher, he thinks that people will be saved by his own efforts. And he goes to extremes to attract people. He thinks, what we need in this church, you say, we need a band, we need an orchestra, I'll dress up like a clown sometimes, and they have all sorts of ideas, and they're sincere. Well, most of them probably. And they do all the efforts because they think that they can persuade people to the atonement. But if they saw that it was limited to the elect, what they would do, they would preach to inform the elect, all right, to tell them the gospel, so that they would respond. And it is the elect to respond. That's why you had the strange situation where you suppose we had here on my left a very, very difficult person and opposed to everything. And here, a man who just gives himself in an activity in the church and so on, and he seems fine. But actually, he's not being born again. And he is lost. But this one, you might say, well, this one, he's hopeless. Yet suddenly, something happens to him. And he rises to Christ. It shows you, really, it doesn't depend on how good or how lovely we've been. It's according to the will of God. It's the elect that can respond. So however hard a person may try to be of the elect or to be in the atonement, it is of no use unless it is of God. And remember now, this is pretty clinical now, but nevertheless, this is true. Now, the key to that is regeneration. Regeneration means to be born again. It's that touch of God through the Holy Spirit in the soul of man that takes away death and puts life there. Well, who did that? God did it. To whom does he do it? To whom he wills. There's your secret of unconditional election. There's your secret also of limited atonement. So what's he going to do with those he touches with life and takes death away? They are the elect, and they will understand the atonement when the time comes. You see, when the elect are born, they look the same, and they need to be converted. They need all those things, but it will happen to them. That's the difference. It will happen. Now, it is a great mystery, and it is no point at all in speculating. Now, TUL, total depravity, unconditional election, limited atonement, and here is one now, irresistible grace. James Arminius said, rubbish, I can resist the grace of God. If I don't want him, I won't have him. Now then, when God's grace and favour and love is coming towards you, you cannot resist it. You cannot refuse it. You may put up a fight. You may really resent it a great deal. But you'll have to capitulate in the end, because the power of God is after you, and you will not escape. But James Arminius would have it, that you could resist the work of God. And it looks very often as if people did. They're very good, and then they go another way, and they resist everything. But actually, they're not elect. See, but you cannot resist the irresistible grace of God. So that when a work of grace has begun in you, when the work of grace has begun in you, then God will finish it. He won't leave it halfway. You might say, well, I may die in between. No, don't worry. God can do what he wills in the last seconds. So he will perform a work, but he begins. Because we are his from eternity. We are here in his heart from the depths of time. Irresistible grace. You cannot resist the grace of God. Then there is perseverance. T-U-L-I-P. Perseverance. And this is a hard one because people think, well, if I persevere, if I give all my strength, if I do all that I can to do the will of God, if I make every effort that is possible, surely then that will help me and I will get nearer to God. I will persevere. I will give my whole life. And people have. You could even give up everything and go as a missionary. You could even do that. And say, well, I persevered. And I've endured many things and I've gone right to the end of my life. I've persevered. Yet, but you've only persevered as a sinful person with a tainted character. No, it's not that. It's God who perseveres with us. We cooperate, but God perseveres with us. And if we are slow in learning, then he will teach us in some way or another. It is God that worketh in you, both to will and to do of his good pleasure. You know that verse, don't you? You must all appear before. It's regarding the I can do all things, and that kind of verse. But this one, it is God that worketh in you, both to will and to do of his good pleasure. Who changed my mind? God. Who gave me the ability to do it? God. That's in Philippians. It is God that worketh in you, both to will and to do of his good pleasure. Now, there's a vast difference between a person saying, I'm having a really tough time here. I'm working really very, very hard to persevere with God. Well, yes, you would. But the other one will say, well, yes, it is hard. And I have to struggle. But I know there is a power within me from God that helps me to go on. He helps me to think spiritually. He helps me to perform spiritually. It is God working in you. Now, just think now, in you here this afternoon, God working in you to do his will. Now, that's the perseverance. Now, then, I want to go back now before I come to something else. Here they are. Total depravity, that we are tainted through and through, as compared to total innocence. You know, a child, you have a little baby, and they're very innocent looking. Yes, but they're children of Adam. They're children of Adam. And so I say, well, can you say they're sinful? Well, everything small is nice, but look at the nasty world it is. Look how evil men were. And all those bad men that we call bad men were nice little babies once. You know, they're all very cuddly babies once. But in them, there was a principle of evil. You know, total depravity that was there. And we can see that that is so. Unconditional election, look at that again. Yet I can't make conditions with God. He chose me because he chose to. That's how it says. You cannot argue. You cannot debate with him. I'm going quickly through them again to remind you. Limited atonement. Here's a verse in Matthew. Gather the elect from the ends of the earth, from one end of the earth to the other. That is, a time will come. That passage actually is on the second coming and the end of all things. It says, gather the elect from the ends of the earth. Right? From one end of the earth to the other. Gather the elect. Why can't we gather them all? No, we gather the elect from all the ends of the earth. We cannot choose to believe. It is This atonement, this gospel is for us who are the regenerate. And Eden mentioned again, hardly the irresistible grace in your life then. You cannot resist him. You may say, well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to have my own way. But you can't. And persevere is the same. Now then, let's look at this. What does it do? It means that you either have a man-centered religion or a God-centered one. It means you can say, I am the one that chose God. I am the one that came to Christ. I am the one that received forgiveness. I decided what to do. I persevered and went on. Well, that is steeped in hypocrisy and also in a kind of a selfish kind of way of speaking as well. It's wrong. But a God-centered one is, to God be the glory, great things he hath done. You see the difference? Now, look how it works out in history. I can't go through the whole of church history, but there are many famous names of these various heresies attacked the church. And very often, the heresies had churches, and they were bigger than the sound churches. That's a sad thing. But by the time the Reformation came, the church had become corrupt and had strange teachings. Sometimes there was one pope, sometimes two, and so on. It became corrupt. Then we had the Reformation, and the Roman church really was full of good works, doing things, going to Mass, doing things. Just good works. It can produce quite nice people, but just good works. Then Martin Luther said, no, the just shall live by faith, and by faith alone. Well, yes, but I remember a professor in college saying to me, but faith is a work. Yes, it is, if we're talking about human faith. But the faith we are talking of, by grace I am saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, it is the gift of God. So that is not from me, it's from God to me, and from me to God. So, what happened in history? Well, we know the Reformation, of the stand that John Calvin made, and also of Martin Luther. Then we come, you know, then to later times. In the 1800s, in the year 1830, they started a school of theology by the Germans. You can't blame them. It was well over, but it kind of initiated there. And what it said, these gospels, these miracles, this virgin birth, this dying for sin, this resurrection, they are superstition. They may have very good ideas and good moral ethics, but for what a 19th century man, surely we have to have a better approach. So they started what we call liberal theology, or modernism. And that was saying, well, Christ is special, but not born of a virgin, but the idea of his purity is good, that he was special. And when he comes to his atonement, they say, well, he was crucified. And some would go so far as to say it was his fault, you know, that he provoked the Pharisees. All sorts of ideas. But they say, but nevertheless, it was very good that he was so sacrificial and so on. And the resurrection is a superb idea. It's a concept. So we had liberal theology. And therefore, all the miracles went by the board, you know. So you had a strange thing taught in the theological colleges. So can you imagine a person like myself seeking God with all my heart, wanted him, and go to a theological college, and I rang back and said, they believe less than I do here. I want to know. And they're making me go worse in the wrong way. Well, in 1830, that was it. So it became, what was that? It was, they say, man's rationale is a center of thought. So we look at that particular miracle, and we decide, is this a miracle, or is it merely a coincidence, or just a good thing that just happened to happen? We look at it intelligently, like 19th century people. And many went that way. and the churches, generally speaking, were swept in. I'd say most of them. And it had started in Wales, but mercifully we had a revival in 1904, but many of the ministers stood back and opposed it. You know, they said it was mere hysteria and not from God. So they rejected, because you see, I mean, the thing is, man's censored, you cannot really accept. But what we have now in 1830 is man's ability is a centre. Man's ability is a deciding factor. Now then, it did a lot of damage, a great deal. In fact, it killed the churches. Spurgeon fought hard against it. And, well, he didn't win, apart from his own church, I mean, but a few others, not many. Many people fought hard against it, but it was a tidal wave of man's pride in his abilities. And then liberalism was dying because there was not all the kind of dying, people not interested. And they preferred preaching that was amusing and entertaining. And people still go to chapel because it was their tradition, and they would go through the service and they would sing things that were sound and good without really realizing what they were singing. Then came something else, and it came the beginning of the end of the 1800s and the beginning of 1900s, and especially now, an evangelism which was give your heart to Jesus. And that was more destructive. Because it was up to you. Come on, you give your heart to Jesus. Decide now. Make your mind up. Give your heart to Jesus. And many fell for this. And some went on and seemed to read their Bibles and pray and go to church. But they were not elect. They were lost. And I think that was the most treacherous of them all. Again, it was man-centered. You come. You decide. Before, it was scholars saying, believe this, believe that, and so on, and we decide. Now, it was individual with a kind of evangelism that came. And they were very, very sincere and hardworking, and working hard and doing all sorts of things to plead. And they'd plead and plead and plead for you to come to Christ until the pressure was so great that people would come forward, and they'd come forward in their hundreds. You know, for most of them. I can remember one campaign in Cardiff, and I was given five names for my church. I went to see the five. One of them came for one service, but the others I went to see, they actually shut the door in my face. They said, oh, it was nothing, it was nothing. Now then, if it's from man, it will fail. So modern evangelism has betrayed us because it uses our words. It uses the word born again. It uses the word conversion. It uses things like hell and heaven and repentance and faith. It uses those words, but they are in the center. I decided I would be a Christian. I'll go forward. It's tragic. Nevertheless, like a golden cord through all the centuries, the truth has prevailed. And there never has there been a time when there have not been like a line of people who have been saved by God, the elect. And nothing can stop that happening. Not persecution, death, anything. Nothing can stop that happening. It will happen. It's a remarkable, remarkable thing. And even in the most remote places, in one vast country where there was a young man, a Buddhist, and in the monastery he was desperate, and he'd only known his own people. But he read his readings, and he went to the chief abbot, or chief, whatever they are, and he said, I am not satisfied. Our writings are lovely, but I am not satisfied. And this man said, I have a little scroll here. I do not know where it's come from. It was a scroll that had come from some place of the Gospel of Mark. And the last verses were there, that there were some disciples that had been sent to every corner of the earth to preach the gospel. He said, I'm going to look for them. Well, he was in the heart, you see, of an eastern country. And then one day, he was traveling across a desert. And he saw some people coming towards him. And he said, can you tell me where those people are who are sent to the four corners of the earth? Yes, we are, they said. They were missionaries. We are. Now then, this is the amazing thing. God will gather his elect in the most impossible situations. Absolutely impossible. He will gather them. There was a yearning soul. There's another one for you. I found it interesting. One, a lady in one of the south, one of the African countries, and whether there had been no missionary or anything. This is quite a century or two ago. And she was walking and wondering, was there any meaning to life? And then she came across a lady who was a missionary. And the missionary told her about Christ. And she said, now stop. I knew there had to be something like that. How possibly? I knew there had to be something like that. She was elect. So it's a very, very powerful thing. I know it is resented. I know it is mocked. I know that. But it produces incredible results because God is at work. That's the difference. Now then, when we come to that then, to make it a little, come down a little to ordinariness, where do we come in? Do we do anything? Now, I'm going to give you an example. I know I've given it two or three times. I don't apologize for that because I can't think of any other example. Now, there's a word that is used called antinomy. It means you can have two laws, both are correct, and yet they're contrary to each other. Now then, how can that be? So it's correct that I struggle for Christ. It is correct that he elects me. But somewhere there's a mystery there where he does allow me the seeking and desiring. He does allow me. And so when I come to Christ, I feel, well, I came, yes, I did. I read my Bible, yes, I did. And he allows for that. But actually, the other law cradles that one. And the illustration I gave years ago, and you all know it's of a painting, an oil painting. And in the background, there's a range of mountains in colours like pale grey, pale brown, and mauve, those kind of colours. And then as you draw nearer, there's the green of the fields and becoming greener and greener until you come to the foreground. Then in the foreground, you have three figures, and they're very dominant colours. And there you are, the background colours are there, but they're fading. But you don't want three figures standing in midair. And one of them is you. One is Satan, and one is Christ. Now then, on the foreground like this, there's a fight. Satan wants you. Christ is drawing you. Now this is a success story. So you turn to Christ. And you say, I chose Christ. And you did. Right? You did. I searched for him. I found him. And you did. And that's true. You did. But then, this is theoretically now, put a tap on your shoulder. God said, would you like to look round? You have chosen Christ. That's true. Now then, I'll name you those mountains. There's Mount Election. There's Mount Predestination. There's Mount the Will of God. And you're standing on redemption ground. You see, my dear child, I had my eye on you for a long time. And you've come. But you know, you were to come. You're to find your own way too. But I sought you. I found you. I brought you. So, in the foreground, yes, I did it. And then we realize the background tells me it is in the background of the power of God. Do you see it? That's how it works. So when we listen to the word of God, we listen with great reverence. And good signs to encourage anybody here who is not the Lord's. If there's interest in your heart, real interest, I can tell you, he started a work in you. So don't resist it. Well, you can't. But don't hold back. You mustn't. You must respond. You must respond. Now then, do you want those again? Tulip, Can you remember it? Total depravity. That's our condition. It is an eternal terminal illness. Total depravity. Unconditional election. There are no conditions. He will save whom he will. Limited atonement. The blood of Christ is for the elect. Irresistible grace. You cannot resist God. Perseverance. Yes, we must persevere, that's true. But we wouldn't persevere unless God was persevering with me. So what you would say like this, don't give up on me, God. Don't give up on me, God. Because I would fail. Well, he won't give up on you. But sometimes we feel, oh, I'm making a mess of things. Well, you are. Oh, Lord, don't give up on me. He doesn't give up on us. He perseveres with us. Those are the fundamentals. Now, can you see Satan would attack that of all things? So you get James Arminius with his 5 points. And no wonder that the Calvinists rose up as one man. And from Calvin's teaching, they brought the biblical fundamental truth. These are they whom thou gavest me, that we may be one. That's who we are. And because of that, that's why we're so different. That's why we don't want to be worldly. That's why we don't go the way of the world. We don't want to be old-fashioned, but neither do we go the very awful way that things are going in speech, in dress, in everything. We don't. We are sober without being boring. I don't mean that at all. Because, you know, we know who we are. We are children of God. Heaven is our home. And we know that we're here for a while and then we are there. So the big thing about this is, can I ever lose my faith? No. You can't. In the other teaching, well, you could lose. I knew one man in one town. I knew him quite well. Do you know, he would believe, he'd be baptized, and then he'd go back again. He was baptized 5 times, actually. All right? Oh, stupid. The thing is, he wasn't converted in the first place. You don't lose your faith. I've come across people say, oh, well, the behavior of the church today, and people disappointed me. I've given up the faith. No, they haven't. They've given up the little thing they had. But you never give up the faith he gives. You can't. It holds you in an eternal grip of grace. You're his forever. And if you're his forever like that and can see it, then you get the confession of faith saying, the chief end of man is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. That doesn't mean happy-clappy. Enjoy in your heart forever. So that's what I've done today. All right. It's a bit long on it, I know. So tulip, total depravity, unconditional election, limited atonement, irresistible grace, and the perseverance of the saints. I finished there. No way.